We call the Housing Policy and Finance and Public Health Finance Division to order. I know some of our members are in and out, and so we're going to get started without a quorum. We have a number of witnesses, both in support of the legislation before us and against the legislation before us. We'll try to make sure everybody gets a chance to speak. So, Representative Shepard, welcome to your committee. And I know that for House Bill 2459, you have a delete everything amendment, I believe. And until we get a quorum, we can't officially put that on, but we can proceed from, you can explain it as if it were on, because it'll just be a matter of putting it in the order that you would like to have it in. Does everybody have the amendment yet? Okay, we'll get that amendment passed out first.
Okay.
And I know we have members who are in and out of other committees, but hopefully we'll have enough folks here shortly to move on. Everybody have the amendment now? Let's put it out there.
Madam Chair, I have a short PowerPoint. Maybe I could go through that.
Sure. Why don't we go ahead and get started? Representative Shepard, why don't you make some comments and
okay, go ahead.
And I believe the amendment is being passed out.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. This presentation will be with our legislation called Pesticide Right to Know legislation that's been around for several years. Just a few PowerPoint slides here to kind of set the context for it. As you can see from this quote from Rachel Carson in her book Silent Spring, the problem of pesticides and how to deal with them in our society has been around for a long, long time. Why do we need a pesticide right to know the legislation? Well, there are several reasons. The first one starts with the Legislative Audit Commission report on pesticides in 2006. Can you hear me, Madam Chair?
Yes.
We all know of the great work that the Office of the Legislative Auditor does, and in 2006 March, he came out with this report with a number of recommendations in regards directed at the Department of Agriculture, which regulates pesticides in our state. And that report was done in regards to concerns about questions about enforcement of pesticide regulations, investigation of complaints, and monitoring of pesticide contamination in water. While the Office of Legislative Auditor gave the Ag Department overall positive rating for the way it was handling pesticides, it did raise a number of concerns and came up with a number of recommendations specifically regards to the issue we're addressing here today. It felt that the department should increase its efforts to measure and monitor urban pesticide use. It should strengthen its views of certain types of pesticide application records, and that the Minnesota legislature should require land managers to provide advance notice to certain people affected by various pesticide applications. And I think, members, you probably have a handout there of the Legislative Auditor's recommendation, I believe, if you just want to follow along at all. The Department of Ag should also improve its written communications with complainants, develop and implement a consistent approach to monitoring urban pesticides, and revise certain issues in its pesticide management plan for pesticide use, aquatic pesticides, and product registration. There's another reason we should have pesticide right to know legislation. A group called PANA, Pesticide Action Network of North America, developed a device called a drift catcher that they use to monitor pesticide drift in the Wadena area and other areas in central and northern Minnesota. And this was over two summers. And as you can see from the results there, this involved the chlorothalonil, fennel, a commonly used pesticide in the area where they have poplar plantations and potato fields. Communities use drift catchers to document pesticide drift. And it's quite clear that drift is a recurrent and chronic problem in these areas. As you can see there, chloramphenamine is commonly used on potatoes in Minnesota. It's much more toxic. It's actually classified as a carcinogen by the EPA. And it also has an effect that's largely unknown when it's mixed with other pesticides. Here you can see some of the results of their monitoring. In one community, Waban, which was quite a ways away, they detected zero amount of drift. But in other points, places like Pine Point, Brazee, Staples, time and again they were able to document pesticide drift from the spraying, aerial spraying of this pesticide on potatoes. Also in Bowerville. So pulling the data all together, they were able to determine that the air was contaminated 123 out of 188 samples tested. Remember, some of you may have recalled that I had a subcommittee hearing in Wadena, and Mr. Paul Mott, who administers the pesticide complaint program for the Department of Agriculture, testified at that hearing that pesticide drift is illegal in Minnesota. It's illegal. You're not supposed to apply a pesticide if there's danger of it drifting. And yet here is this group, Pesticide Action Network, was able to document time and time again that pesticide drift occurs all over in the area of the potato field. Here's an example of some of the presentations that were presented in the Wadena hearing. The arrow obviously points to a plane applying pesticides in the area of that potato field. Another shot of it. This is a third reason that we need pesticide right to know. This is a picture of Candy Anderson. And she testified at the Wadena hearing also. If you think that the laws, the current laws of the state of Minnesota are going to protect you, they're not. She was a victim of pesticide drift from aerial applications. Well, we're actually not sure. Her exposure came in July 10th of 2006. And it wasn't until last week that she filed a complaint. Her doctor, she had to see a doctor, had severe problems with her eyes. She actually had cornea burns in her eyes. This whole investigation took from July about 17th of 2006 until last week. It was just finally completed last week. I had requested a copy of the file last February, a year ago, and I got it Friday afternoon at 4:50 is when they had been completed or closed on Thursday, and I got a copy last Friday. So if anybody thinks that the current regulatory scheme that we have going in Minnesota now will protect you from pesticide exposure, I don't think that's the case.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
You said you requested the information. From whom and from whom did you receive it?
From the Department of Agriculture. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture. They said they couldn't give it to me last February because it was an ongoing investigation. It only got completed last week. Okay, so about a year and a half after this exposure actually occurred. And interesting, I've read it through completely, and it's quite clear that there's a lot of ambiguity yet as to exactly what chemical she was exposed to, or actually the incident actually caused her exposure, because there were three or four spraying activities in her area right at that same time from July 7th through July 10th of 2006. This woman, and she has documented in her testimony that her animals died and so on, and the applicator who was found to be responsible, and frankly I'm not convinced they even got the right applicator, but he was fined $750 for not indicating on his report what the pesticide was that he was using or something like that. It wasn't for the actual drift and an incident, it was for a reporting error on his application. So that's a third reason. A fourth reason is that, you know, in many ways, citizens exposed to these substances, which may pose a risk to their health, really have a right to this basic kind of information. Even the EPA talked about this back in 1994. The Journal of Pesticide Reform obviously is advocating for reform of pesticide laws, and I think really makes the case that Pesticide rights to NOAA legislation offers people a chance to have additional precautions to avoid exposure to potentially toxic chemicals. Another reason that we should do it here in Minnesota is that other states are already doing it. 29 states have some form of pesticide right to know legislation already. And it varies. Some of them restrict, or not restrict, but have right to know only for agricultural pesticides. Others include urban. Some include only urban pesticides. So, you know, you can find a lot of different examples of that. And we've tried to draw some ideas from these other states in putting together this legislation. And a final reason is that Minnesota already is doing some things. We already have warning signs for application in cities. We already require commercial and non-commercial applicators to put up warning signs to tell people that pesticides have been applied to lawns and turf areas. We also have regulations for the application of pesticides in schools to protect school children. So we already have started down this path, and the pesticide right to know legislation that I'm have before you is kind of a continuation, I think a logical continuation, especially given the recommendations from the legislative auditor in 2006. And so with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to move H2459DE1.
Yeah, this will move that House File 2459 be recommended to pass. And my understanding is that it would be re-referred to the finance, returned to finance with the proviso that it be re-referred to the Committee on Environment.
That's correct.
Okay. And now you're moving the amendment before us, which is H2459DE1. Representative Shumpert moves that amendment to put it in the order that he wants his bill to be in. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails, and the amendment is before us as the bill.
Okay. Madam Speaker, I'm going to go over it quickly. You know, this state, to accomplish what we want to here is the pesticide right to know legislation. Basically, we want to do two things. Right now, under state law, pesticide applicators have to keep records of the pesticides they apply. But that's all they have to do with them. What this legislation will do is we require them to file that information with the Department of Agriculture on a monthly basis, and it'll make that information available to the public. And the second thing the pesticide right to know legislation will be a notification that when pesticide applicators are going to apply pesticides, whether it's in an urban environment or in a rural environment, they will have to give advance notice to whoever is concerned about that so that people can anticipate these applications are going to occur. Now, we can start on page one there. You can see the underlying portion. Essentially, right now, there's a 48-hour notice required in an urban setting from when the pesticide is applied till 48 hours after. What we're doing is this legislation is saying it would be nice if people knew in advance that pesticides were going to be applied. So we're requiring that the notification that pesticides will be occur will be done 48 hours before the pesticide is applied. That would be on line 1.9, 1.8, and 1.9.
And you're changing it to 96 hours.
Right. Okay. Then on page two, on the top 2.1 to 2.5, this is the requirement for advance notice for application in rural areas. It requires the placement of 6-foot poles around the perimeter of property so adjoining property owners, anyone driving through the country, can see that application of pesticides is going to occur within 48 hours. There's also a web-based requirement here that the Commission of Agriculture is required to develop a website where applicators can post that information on the website 48 hours in advance so that anyone who wants to keep track of this can log on and see when pesticide applications may occur in their area. Further down on 2.27, obviously we need to fund this type of data collection that will occur when applicators have to provide this information to the Department of Agriculture. Currently, right now, there is a fund called the Pesticide Registration Fund that everyone who sells a pesticide in Minnesota must contribute to, and the as you can see from the top there on line 210, presently it's 0.4% of previous sales, and we're increasing that to half of 1% of annual gross sales to fund this, so that this additional revenue then will be used to fund the development of this data collection and making this information available to the public. Am I going too fast, Madam Chair? Okay. By increasing this to a half of percent instead of 0.4%, it will generate about $400,000 annually, which is about $800,000 a biennium, which according to some comparable, what states have done otherwise, is about what it will take, I believe, to set up this data collection fund. Section 2.27 to section 2.32 explains how this data collection will be worked. It'll take 20% of the additional revenue will go to setting up this data collection system within the Department of Agriculture. In addition to that, applicators, you know, not everybody's computer savvy, and applicators will still be able to supply this data in written form. We felt that was necessary, because not all applicators are high-tech. And then on page, let's see, it'd be page 4. On page 4, we set out the requirements of what types of applicators and what kind of pesticides will be needed to be part of this new database that we're creating. Commercial applicators or non-commercial applicators, and private applicators who apply pesticides to potato or hybrid poplar fields must file these records of... There is an error here, Madam Speaker. The word restrictive, we had edited that out.
Can you give me the line? And
yes, it's line 4.7.
Mr. Shepard, you wish to amend this amendment by removing the word restrictive at the end of line 4.7?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, I do.
Okay, Representative Shepard moves the removal of the word restrictive at the end of line 4.7 to put it in the order that he thought it was in, I guess. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Madam Chair, do we also need to take out use on 4.8?
Representative Shumper?
Yes, I'm sorry.
All right.
We just drafted this about 20 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm. So the amendment at this point then is to also remove on line 4.8 the word at the beginning of the line, use?
Use, correct.
Okay. That, again, puts it in the order that Representative Shumper wishes it to be in. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. And
okay, and if I can
continue. Two words are removed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then we just stipulate what type of information. This is basically right off the report form that applicators are now required to fill out and keep for their own data. So we're essentially just saying, the data you're already collecting on your daily applications, the same thing, just send it in to us. And we're requiring to do that every month. One of the farm groups suggested that it might be good to have some kind of penalty there, a nominal penalty, and so in Section B, we included that. One of the same farm group also was concerned that, you know, this information is going to be public data, so people can monitor what kind of exposure they're undergoing, if they live in a certain area, what an applicator is applying, and so it's going to be public data. So some people have been concerned that a company or a business might engage in data mining or use this for commercial purposes, and so we included a penalty for that. We do not want this information to be used for commercial marketing purposes. So that's the bill. We have quite a number of people who want to testify on all sides of this issue, Madam Speaker. If there are questions about the language of the bill, we could either answer them now or as we go along, too.
I think in the interest of ensuring that we do get all the witnesses from both sides, maybe we should go forward unless there's something that refers specifically to the explanation of the language of the bill. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Chumple, you have added on page 3 private applicators. I'm wondering if there's a definition that you have for who a private applicator is.
Representative Chumple.
Representative Anderson, what line?
Environment.
Are you looking at?
3.14.
Page 3, line 3.14, it says, and private applicators. I wonder if you have put in statute or put in your language here the definition of who a private applicator is.
I would have to, excuse me. I would have to go back and look at the definitions for the entire section dealing with pesticides. That's 18.B in the statute, and I have to say I don't have that in front of me, what the definition is. But in general, aren't... Madam Speaker, I've just been told that a private use applicator is someone who has been certified to apply restrictive use pesticides.
Okay.
If I may explain a little bit, one of the things we discovered, and it's the reason we made some changes in the language here right now, is that, or within the last few days, is that some of the pesticides that people are having concern about are not restrictive use, and so private applicators can also apply those. And we wanted to make sure those pesticides would be covered by this regulation. And had we limited this language only to restrictive use pesticides, there'd have been a number of pesticides that wouldn't have had to be reported. And that's why we included private applicators and why we removed the reference to restrictive use that I talked about a little bit ago.
All right. Okay, give us something about the language of the bill.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess the question I wanted to raise was, Representative Shumper, in your bill you had talked about a particular amendment that you put in here that basically said we don't want the businesses to use this as a database for other businesses to be able to go into. And I was just curious as to the requirements of this bill seem to implicate that every business that's going to be doing the spraying has to put where they sprayed, who they sprayed for, into a common database. And how in the world are you going to guarantee that other businesses can't access that database and indeed do exactly what you're trying to prevent here?
Well, you know, that's why we have the penalty there, Representative Stevenson. I don't know how else we would do it other than to create a penalty for it.
Madam Chair.
If there's some other idea you have, I'm certainly open to it, because I think it's a real concern that the farmers have.
And, Madam Chair, to that point, I wholly agree with you. We're talking about small businesses here who go out and do extensive marketing to get a client base, and then what we're doing here is requiring that they put their database onto an open database so that everybody can see what the issues are. We ran into this with the mandatory insurance for driver's insurance about 2 or 3 years ago. We were trying to enforce that, found out that the insurance companies weren't wild about putting all of the people that they insured onto a common database because other people were going to infringe on that. In fact, that's what killed the process, was the inability for the Department of Commerce to actually hold those close. And it takes a huge computer service or a huge service network to try and do any kind of enforcement. And Madam Chair and Representative Shepherd and members, I think, you know, just in terms of the mere cost of the trying to enforce that thing, merely to say that there's a penalty to it is not going to deter someone from going into expanding their business at the cost of somebody else. So, you know, we need to get over this misnomer that if we put a penalty on it, it's not going to happen. It's going to happen. And so we need to look out for the small businesses that are being impacted by this in particular. This is one point, Madam Chair, that I think is problematic with this bill, number one. But I think the other is that we need to, if we're going to do this type of thing, then we need to send it to the appropriate committees, which would be Commerce, so that they can evaluate what impact this is going to have on the small businesses. And we can have that discussion. I just wanted to bring it up as you were going through this, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, if you had a question, of course.
No, I was just going to ask us to go ahead with the witnesses, but I wasn't going to ask you.
Madam Chair, and just to Representative Steverson's point, I think he raises a legitimate point that we need to keep the data private for farmers. I guess two things. One, to remind the committee that this is a public health committee, and our jurisdiction is to try to protect the public health here in Minnesota. And I know for sure this is going to ag, and I think they're going to obviously have that question plus many others, I'm sure. But I think that there might be an opportunity for us to somehow code this information in a way that protects the small businesses, which many of us are concerned about too, while still providing for the access or public safety, public health that we are trying to do. Anyway, I guess I would prefer that I would like to focus on the public health aspect of this, and I know that we have many of our colleagues, your friends as well as mine, who will be forcefully asking those questions in the next committee.
Yeah, this is starting in this committee, and as you pointed out appropriately, this is the public health aspect of our committee.
And before we hear from the witnesses, I just want to respond to Representative Steverson's concern. I have the same concern. It's a tricky proposition to strike a balance so that people who access the web where information about upcoming applications will be posted, how are they going to know which ones will apply to their vicinity unless there's either a record of the land or the area using some kind of description or the name of the property owners or both. So, you know, it's a tough balancing act between, I agree, protecting the commercial preventing the commercial exploitation and yet giving people a chance to go on the web and say, well, you know, my neighbor over here in this quarter section is going to apply this pesticide tomorrow, and, you know, now I know it, I'll know enough not to be outside my house and, you know, not have my children playing out in the yard. So, you know, if we could come up with a response to that or a solution to that, I'm open to it. But I don't know how you do it unless you identify the property. And any way you identify the property, either with a legal description or ownership, you're going to run into the same problem, it seems to me. So, you know, it's something that, you know, I'm open to working it out, but I'm not sure what the solution is. So.
Okay, why don't we go ahead with your witnesses, Representative Trump.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee. I'm David Walling. I'm a physician working at the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy.
Welcome
and I'm just
going to
take 5 minutes or so to talk a little bit about the perspective of this bill, my perspective on this bill in terms of people going to a health provider and maybe with some health concerns, they have questions about whether those health problems are or maybe related to pesticide exposures. And so there are two people in that setting. There's the patient or the parent if the patient's a child, and then there's the medical practitioner, and I want to address both a little bit. Can you hear me okay, Madam Chair?
Hi. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. So just to make the obvious point that the reason we're talking about pesticides in a health context is that they are toxins by design. They wouldn't be effective against pests if they weren't. But what people sometimes don't appreciate is that when you're talking about small mammals like rodents or even insects, many of the same biologic building blocks in those organisms are the same as in the human population. And so the targets of the pesticides, at least potentially, are the same in the human population as in those pest populations. So, for example, the EPA itself acknowledges that of the 900 or so registered pesticides under FIFRA, 140 or so are acknowledged neurotoxins, that is toxic to the brain and nervous system. So that includes carbamates and organophosphates and pyrethroids. So in this bill, we're talking about restricted use pesticides, those available for purchase and use only by certified applicators or those under their supervision. But this is a significant number of total pesticides, about a quarter according to the EPA website. And it's also worth noting that these restricted use pesticides can be found in other products that are not restricted in their formulation. And why are they restricted? Well, they're restricted because of the hazard potential of those pesticide products or their application. So they could be hazards to the human population. They might be carcinogens or neurotoxins or acute poisoning hazards. There could be a history of accidents with that particular use. It could be a high hazard use like fumigation. Or there could be concerns about groundwater contamination or toxicity to non-target animals. In other words, non-pests that just happen to get in the way. Of these Minnesota pesticide use, this is data from 2005, the ones in yellow are just the ones on a quick review that I highlighted that have some restricted uses. I'm not saying that all the uses in Minnesota are restricted, but at least some are. But what's notable is that many of the top used pesticides in Minnesota actually have some restricted uses, so there's this obvious relevance there. What we know from the science is that not everybody is of the same vulnerability to these applications. And often it's the youngest people among us, including the fetus in pregnant women, who are vulnerable to pesticide exposures, including those from air drift or sort of incidental to restricted uses. And that vulnerability comes both from the fact that the organ systems in these little people are still developing. And so potentially, at least, the neurotoxin could interrupt development of the brain. But it also comes from the fact that there are some unique exposures in this population. They're down on the carpet playing, and some pesticides will concentrate at that ground level. So if there's a pesticide application indoors or if it's tracked in the house, that little one might very well have a higher exposure. And then, of course, the other thing about children is that they can't advocate for themselves, so it's doubly important for the medical providers and for the parents who are their advocates to have that information. There's a lot of potential routes of exposure from these restricted applications. For example, a child in a yard could potentially be exposed from a neighbor using a lawn service where there's a certified applicator. This child could be exposed to a pet who has been treated at a grooming shop. Could be, as the child gets older and has hobbies, maybe they take up golf. There could be applications at golf course or on the playing field that they frequent. And then, of course, in the household environment, you might buy a new house and not be aware of what was applied in that house previously. This information that would result under this bill would be of potential importance to these residents. So this is just a study from a few years ago looking at, it's not a restricted use pesticide, but 2,4-D is a common pesticide, just to show that these outdoor uses can get tracked indoors on the hooves and pads of animals. And in this case, it was found when they studied the indoor residues that the dog had tracked in, that they persisted in the indoor environment. And in fact, the child was exposed in this household to residues of 2,4-D up 2 weeks after it was applied outdoors. And the levels at which the child was exposed were four times, the indoor levels were four times higher than the pre-application levels. So this is just to say that some of these uses can be tracked inside, even when the application is not in that household. So when a patient comes in, they generally have one of two kinds of complaints, right? Either they have questions about an acute event. Maybe they think they were exposed to an aerial spraying, and they're wondering, you know, what is the effect of what is that exposure causing some of the symptoms I'm having? And the problem here is that it's very difficult currently, if not impossible, for the run-of-the-mill physician or health practitioner to get access to the data about what was applied in a timely manner to address that patient's complaints, as you heard from Representative Schumper. I'm not going to go into detail here, but this is a published study in pediatrics from several years ago of a young infant who actually was exposed to a pesticide, as it turned out, but was first diagnosed with cerebral palsy, and only 6 months after they presented to the physician's office did the mother happen to ask, gee, could this be related to the pesticide application that occurred in the house just before we brought the baby home from the hospital? And in fact, they found that even 6 months later, the levels in that house were six times higher than would be expected pre-application. And so when they took the baby out of the household, those symptoms resolved. Pesticide poisonings are not uncommon, even amongst the youngest children under age six. These are some data from the EPA's own textbook for managing pesticide poisoning. The second kind of scenario, like somebody would present, would be somebody saying, you know, I have some kind of health problem, chronic health problem, or my child does. Maybe it's a learning disability, maybe it's Parkinson's disease, maybe it's asthma, and I'm curious about what the contribution might be from pesticides. Maybe I live in a rural area. And what's new in the science over the last several years is the understanding that virtually all chronic diseases have multiple contributions, not only genetics or nutrition, but also environmental chemical exposure, and that these can be significant. Of course, in contrast to genetics, they're preventable contributors to these chronic diseases, or at least potentially preventable. And we all are carrying in our bodies residues of dozens of different pesticides at any one time. So we know we have the exposure. This is from national data collected by the CDC. What we don't know in the clinical office is, for my individual patient, what is their exact exposure. So again, this information that would be publicly available on uses around that individual patient would be helpful. At the same time, we know and are increasingly recognizing that chronic diseases have linked to pesticide exposures, whether it's cancers or neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's disease or birth defects, and increasingly there's some evidence too for neurodevelopmental disorders like learning disabilities. And I won't go into this, but these are some recent studies looking at premature birth, miscarriage rates, preterm labor, smaller infant size, all linked to pesticide exposures. And this is a study linking it from North Dakota recently, looking at increased IQ, where an association was noted with the lower IQs being found in children with the greatest pesticide exposure. And it was a mixture of different pesticides there that they were looking at. So let me just wrap up there and say that for the clinical environment, there's two things that you want to assess for any patient. You want to know the history of their complaint, and therefore what the factors were that might have contributed to their illness, and then there's the physical exam. But our physical exam is guided by the information that we get from the patient. So if they're able to give us information about what pesticides they may be exposed to, it only improves our ability to treat their problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Question for Dr. Ronda. Senator McNair?
Madam Chair, my question is more for you. I'm just wondering about the time of the bill and everything, I'm really concerned that there's a number of people that want to speak on both sides of the issue, and I'd really like to hear how the bill is going to apply to them. I respect the doctor and some of the historical perspective, but I'm wondering if we're going to be cognizant of all the people that are here that want to speak to the bill and how it's going to apply.
I'm going to try to get to hear everybody, and I believe our time.
Madam Speaker, I've asked those witnesses who are testifying for the bill to limit their speaking to 5 minutes, because I understand Representative McNamara's concerns. I know there are people from a long ways away who would like to testify about the bill, and so you know, we want to accommodate that.
Okay, I really have to make sure everybody gets to say. I did want to ask Dr. Wonga just a quick question, which is currently, as you just explained, the last comment. It's important to know if the patient knows if they've been exposed. What are we finding now in terms of patients being able to tell their physicians, their healthcare practitioner, whether or not they've been exposed to a pesticide?
What are we able to tell them?
What are they able to tell you? What kind of experience are we having?
Well, once they've witnessed, you know, the pesticide application, and it's quite obvious, it would be difficult for them to know. They may know their neighbor sprayed something or had something sprayed, but their neighbor may not be able to tell them what it was. And or if in the event of a chronic disorder like Parkinson's disease, where the emerging science is saying that there is good evidence that pesticides are often playing a role, it's harder, right, because the exposure is in the past. Now, in that case, a researcher who's interested in this connection would benefit from being able to look back at the records and see what the pesticide exposures were that occurred around that person.
I guess my question, too, was along the line of, are they able, the physicians or patients at this point, I guess it's the reason for the bill, able to get this information from...
Yeah. Oh, I see. I don't think they are. As I understand it, a physician could basically petition to the Commissioner of Agriculture, but as we heard, that information may be months or even years in coming, and at that point, it's not going to benefit that patient to a terribly great degree.
Okay. Thank you. There's no further questions. I'm your next witness. Thank you, Dr. Wonga.
Representatives, my name is Rebecca Sheets, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee.
Keep this brief. It's very important that everyone understands that farming and working with farmers has been a big part of my life from the time I was a small child. And it's been a long journey that brings me here today to talk to you about this issue. In the interest of time, I'm going to keep it brief. I started working for farmers when I was 6 years old. On large farms, you name it, I did it. My grandparents were small, sustainable farmers at the time. And for me, it was very exciting to meet the extension agents and the sales reps when they came out to the field to talk to us. So when I was offered a job with a research project, I thought I had a dream job, and I was like getting paid to go to college. I worked with research on different classes of pesticides to help my neighbors, the farmers. We researched insecticides for potatoes, edible beans. We researched fungicide classes for plant diseases. We studied herbicides for weed control, and we worked with alternative crops for central Minnesota. When I questioned the safety, I was told not to worry. No one was using any protective gear. And this is the university, surely they would tell me, wear protective gear. And it finally did arrive in the later years of my job. I am now chemically sensitive to almost all classes of pesticides. I sustained an acute pesticide poisoning on the job in 1993 when I was sprayed by a plane while collecting samples in a potato field. The field was posted that it had been sprayed 4 days previously. The spray contained two fungicides mixed with an insecticide. I became very ill within 24 hours and continued to get sicker over the course of the next several months. The right side of my body developed tremors that lasted for over a year and a half. And this event left me with chemically induced asthma. And I was told pesticides do not hurt people. It takes years for the effects to show up. So I continue to work to support my family, using gear when necessary. But since this exposure, I developed headaches, strange rashes, flu-like illnesses that only go away in the wintertime. I'm light and odor sensitive and develop mood swings. And the nerves in my legs and arms began to itch and burn. I was told pesticides don't hurt people. I did fight for safety in the workplace, and some very small efforts were made. I was exposed to a fumigant in 2002, which caused more health concerns. I went through rapid menopause, and I lost my job. The plane in our area may start spraying on Monday and work its way around in a circle all week long, all day long some days, until it comes back to our area in about 5-6 days. This goes on in the spring, the summer, and into the fall. Our daughter, who lived with us when she was pregnant, had our grandson, who at the age of 4 months was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer called adrenal neuroblastoma, which, when I looked into the research, says it's caused by insecticide. Our other granddaughter was born with a birth defect called PR type 2 inflammatory condition, and at the age of 6 years underwent surgery to help her with the massive headache she suffered. Now this same little girl lives in the summertime next to a school playground that last summer was sprayed in 3 or 4 times with something that lingered in the air all summer. Her youngest sister was born with severe birth defects. Spending time at home to avoid more exposures doesn't work. I am exposed to the drift and the volatilization off of the neighbor's fields because they are sprayed in windy and humid conditions. And I have talked to the applicators and the dealers direct, and it doesn't work. Last spring, when I was sprayed in my own front yard, the winds were 17 miles an hour. 2 more herbicides accumulated in our body. For many months, we are ill because of the drift off these fields. My husband is a Vietnam vet with progressed Parkinson's disease, probably caused by these kinds of exposures. For the first time ever in the spring of 07, we raised organic solace for feeder pigs and meat. They aborted their fetuses. We lost our business of selling organic produce. The trees in our yard and our windbreak are dying. Fruit trees and other parts of our gardens are dying from the drift. My chickens had breast tumors and the livers were inedible. We can't afford to leave, and we can't afford to stay in this area. See, we suffer from these constant exposures. Going into the house and closing the doors is not the answer to drift. It permeates into everything. The chemicals are in the air every day. And I'm here to make it very clear that pesticide drift is happening every day in our area. I see little children being exposed when the sprayers fly over or spray next to the home. I see young people riding their bikes through the mist drift of the spray or sitting in it watching the planes. I see children that live next to the fields getting sick with yeast infections and thrush and allergies and cancer and flu cold symptoms that flare up again the next time the sprayers come around. This is about the benefits every week for a person with a rare disease in our area. Small towns reek of Roundup and 2,4-D and any number of other products. Our cars are coated going down the road. Our houses are drifted into and on. Our children playing in the garden. Our animals in the pasture. The gardens we grow without pesticides by choice are drifted on. My Amish friends and their families are hit going down the road in their buggies. Pesticides really don't know when to stop killing, and they don't know how to stay where they're put. This isn't about me. I'm pretty sure what my fate's going to be. It's about my grandchildren and your grandchildren and my neighbor's children and their children. There's enough data, I think, in the world to show that pesticides are harming us. And I am concerned the research should be over at this point. We need to take back our rights to breathe and say no more if we're going to stand by and let this happen. So I'm here to support this legislation as a good start in protecting ourselves and our families.
That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Representative Shepard, you probably have about 8 more minutes, but if we're going to have an equal amount of time. So thank you. Are there questions for this witness? Well, thank you very much for coming and telling us your story.
And actually, Madam Chair, I was thinking perhaps we could rotate, if you're open to that.
Well, let's take the time first, and we'll see how we do with that. Maybe we'll get through it today. Can you introduce yourself to the committee, please?
I'm Sue Meyer, related to
Donna in Minnesota Health. Get a little closer to the microphone, please, because I won't be able to hear you there.
Oh, okay. Dear ladies and gentlemen of the Minnesota House of Representatives Health Committee, hello, my name is Sue Meyer. I have come to ask you to vote yes on the pesticide rights no bill. I live in central Minnesota, Todd County. My husband and I have 11 children. We both grew up on farms, and our parents were the first generation to begin occasional pesticide use on certain crops. We were raised in confidence as to the safety and necessity of these products. Like much of the population today, we rarely gave them a second thought. I believe that we have been slowly and carefully manipulated and conditioned through the media and other sources to ignore the terrible and destructive inconsistencies in our agricultural policies, to accept pesticide use without question. Much of this manipulation comes in the form of calculated silence in regards to what could be a burning social and health issue. This has also led us to believe that we have no power over huge corporations which claim that it's necessary to use millions of pounds of pesticides in our state each year. We are now 2.5 generations from the introduction of pesticide use. Pesticide-related medical and pollution reports are flowing in, and the so-called romance that has ensued for the past 50 years of pesticide use is coming to a close. Pesticides, which were designed solely to kill living plants and microorganisms on agricultural fields, golf courses, recreational lands, and parks, have done exactly that which they were designed to do, kill. Pesticides have been efficient not only to the areas of target, but have managed to travel by drift or runoff to neighboring properties, streams, aqueducts, and into the very air that we breathe, leaving near areas where pesticides are used puts all living organisms in a high-risk zone. This includes wildlife, birds, water species, as well as, and most importantly, the people. Pesticides kill. It's that simple. My moment of apathy ended on a beautiful summer day 2.5 years ago when my cousin and I were blatantly exposed to pesticide drift in 17 on our wind while working in the garden. Every one of us smelled the sweetest, pungent odor and almost immediately felt as though our throats were closing in. Our noses began to twitch and run, and two of my daughters had severe respiratory and neurological reactions. It was at that moment that I realized the connection between the symptoms I was feeling and seeing in my children and the ill health that we, along with our farm animals, had been experiencing since the spring of 2002. For it was then that a company by the name of International Paper planted hybrid poplar trees near our home. For the first 2 years, pesticide application came as often as every 3 weeks. Many applications occurred at about the noon hour when wind speeds and outdoor activity was at a high for the day. We can usually smell whatever it is they are applying to the fields, even inside our home. I have complained to the contract sprayers during application, but they continue anyway. I've called the Department of Ag to complain about drift on numerous occasions. I've received no help from them in protecting our property or family. Long story short, I am verbally told one thing and written reports are sent saying another. The law states that drift is illegal, yet we have no protection against it. In conversation with an employee of the Department of Ag a year and a half ago, I was told, too, I've been watching the same scenario for a number of years. You're like a lone wolf out there howling alone. I'm encouraging you to keep howling, but find others to do it with. Keep documenting everything that goes on. But let me tell you this. As long as you're fighting International Paper, there will never be detection in this lab. There's too much money behind it. But I'm encouraging you to keep fighting anyway. Don't be like everyone else and give up. It's also significant to mention that most of these applications are tank mix, to include 2 to 3 pesticides. On the phone with Jim Tompkins of the EPA Washington, D.C., he told me, quote, "These concocted brews are not regulated by the EPA," unquote. Since the trees were planted in 2002, our family has experienced numerous changes in our health and environment. And I've got a whole list of stuff here, and if you're interested, we can go into it later, but I won't. Things like there's no more frogs choking in the creek down by the trees, by our home, and our land, on our property. The bird population has disappeared. our animals, our horses have developed severe neurological disorders, teeth, asthma. They've had fertility problems, rabbits' fertility problems, and when they are able to have babies in the early spring, they're usually born deformed, and their insides are like liquid. In fact, you've got little babies, and they're rolling like this, and their guts just roll. It's just blood. There's no validity to the organs at all. And they, and our family, my children, myself, my husband, especially in the fall and summer months, our symptoms and complaints range from high fevers, chronic headaches, stomach pain, sinus problems, sore throat, swollen mittens, skin rashes. And I have pictures of two of my children and with the skin rashes that developed after they were exposed to pesticides. And my daughter has, whenever we are drifted upon, she gets these bloody noses that are so scary. And it's been one thing after another. I had had such a reaction that my thyroid completely shut down. I fainted, broke four ribs, ruptured my spleen, and I was months trying to recover from that. And they said that the reason I fainted was because my thyroid had a complete shutdown. Well, what's causing that? Could be the pesticides, the doctor said, but try to prove it. Because I'd almost bled to death and had to receive blood, so to test my blood would have been pretty inefficient at the time. And all these health changes that began to occur about 8 months after the trees were planted. I have many more things on the tape, but I'll cut it short. So we ask you, our representatives here today, who currently sit as our voice of authority, to help us regain control of our state, help us regain control of our families. It seems especially absurd to us that we don't even legally have the right to know what we are being exposed to. Help us to regain this right to know what is being applied near our homes. Help us to be able to live our lives in fear of our air and water being laced with every pesticide. We need this legislation so that we can better protect ourselves. I also wanted to say real quick that because of the exposure to my family, I work with groups like HANA, Clean Water, and MNPA, and I have been a certified thrift catcher for the past 2 years, and I'm thinking of passing up for the plane around. That was a picture I had taken when I went out to catch. I had run a series of thrift catchers, and I guess it's one point, and they started spraying at 6 o'clock in the morning. I was airplane application on the potato field right near Horseshoe Lake, which is a public lake that a lot of swimming, fishing goes on there, and there are many homes that live along there. He was spraying in 12.5 mile an hour winds for 3.5 hours along that potato field area. And the numbers that I picked up, I had been also running drift catcher 7 miles northwest of that very site, and I had been picking up 000. Anyway, so this guy records the airplane spraying that day, first right there beside the potato field. It's constant. I mean, you know, the numbers are quite high there. Anyway, so the very next morning, I did pick up the same product that they were spraying on the potato field the next morning, 7 miles northwest of, you know, what was being sprayed there that morning. It was just awful. I got very ill. I asked the people in the house there, I said, what are you guys going to do about this? Oh, nothing. They've been doing this for 20-some years. Well, come to find out, they have two genetically retarded boys, and they're never sick. I said, doesn't that concern you? Oh, no. I said, you might want to talk to the doctor about that because your immune system should very well be running on hyperdrive. And I said, and you're going to watch, because his ex-wife actually has fibromyalgia and every kind of health problem. After she moved away, it all hit her. And like I said, the genetically retarded boys, both of them. So, I want to thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. And President Semper, I think at this point, I know you have two more witnesses, but I think what I'd like to do is we'll give equal time to the other opponents, and then if we can, we'll come back at this time and be able to hear from them. Okay, thank
Madam
you.
Madam Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Well, I was wondering if I could ask Ms. Meyer a couple of questions, if I could. I want to thank you, Ms. Meyer, for your testimony again. I believe it's pretty much the exact same testimony we heard when the committee met in Wadena, and you had talked about the experience you had with the paper company, and I offered to reach out to you and give you information so you could better work with the paper company, and I was just curious, what was your result? I know we had a tough time you getting the information, even though I had sent it on quite a long time before, and I'm wondering, how were you able to resolve that?
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. McNamara, As it turned out, I had met with Representative Al Gunty at that time, but just shortly after that. And he also had promised, he said that he would just simply get me the information, that I didn't have to bother making the phone calls. And so about 3 weeks after I'd met with him, I still hadn't received the information. So then I called his office and I told him, you know, who I was and where I met with him and what information was supposed to come back to me. And I never did receive the information. So, you know, I guess I shouldn't have left it in Mr. Dunkey's hands to get me that information.
Is that nice, Mayor?
Well, Madam Chair, Ms. Meyer, didn't you call my office and mention that you were unable to get the information? And didn't my legislative assistant give you the information at that time, even though I had previously forwarded the information to the chair of this committee, the author of the bill, the committee legislative assistant, or the committee administrator, and your individual state representative?
Madam Chair? Actually, yes.
Thank you. And Ms. Meyer, what was the result of your conversations with Versa Paper, formerly International Paper?
I didn't contact them.
Thank you. Okay. Madam Chair, I want to make sure this is on the record.
Okay, that's fine. But she was in the middle of a sentence. I just want to hear the end of your sentence. And then you can speak. Ms. Meyer?
Like I said, by the time that information got to me, I had planned to meet with Mr. Al Gunty, and he had promised to get me that information, and he didn't. And he said, I've had a grandbaby was born, and it's been pretty busy, so I didn't contact him waiting for Mr. Gunty's information to come back to me.
Well, is that back, Mayor?
Madam Chair, Representative Shumper, and Ms. Meyer, I reached out in an honest way, in a very fair way, to you to tell you that we have an opportunity here to work on your situation. And I forwarded this information, and I have the email dated 10/27 and 11/13/07. And I really think it would have been fair for you to mention to the testimony that I got this information to you, and you didn't reach out in a phone call to find out how we could resolve this issue so that these people are letting you know about your concerns. Madam Chair, I don't want to pick on a testifier. I have never done that. But I think it's fair for the committee and for folks in the audience to know. I reached out to two testifiers up there, one of them in Representative Eakin's committee and one in Representative Otremba's committee. And truthfully, I don't want you to say which one of the two you are, but I reached out to both of them. I don't know which one of those is your state representative. It doesn't matter. But I don't know that it's fair that when I offered to reach out, you're telling us how bad this situation is, but you haven't even done to reach out to the company to see if they'll work with you and address your concerns.
Madam Speaker, I'm having a little hard time, Representative McNamara, remembering exactly this information you seem to be holding in your hand there. Is this offer to mediate? I'm trying to remember. Were you just offering to mediate some discussions, or did you have some concrete information? And if you've got some concrete information, perhaps you could read it right now. I think everyone would be interested in hearing this information that you have there that's somehow going to address their concerns.
Madam Chair, the concern of these folks is that they're not being notified, and the people applying these chemicals are not working with them. And I was moved by their testimony. They talk about getting sprayed on and the airplane buzzing them and the wind being blowing. And I asked, have you called the folks that are doing this? And that's why I think it's important that we hear from testimony of some of the applicators and how do they contact. And I offered to reach out to her, Ms. Meyer, with this information. And I sent it on weeks before my legislative assistant got a very troubling phone call from Ms. Meyer, mad that she hadn't gotten the information. She was disappointed she hadn't gotten the information, which I don't believe you had yet. And that was legitimate. You hadn't gotten the information, even though I had forwarded it on. And I've got the email trail, Representative Shumper, and it was to Representative Otremba and Representative Eakin. And I don't know which is which. It doesn't matter. But we got her the information. My point is, you got the information quite a while ago, and I was hopeful that you would reach out. You asked, and I thought I delivered. And now we're down here hearing the same testimony again, and I'm wondering how hard you're working to try and find out. I mean, a phone call, that's all I thought that was a good thing. I mean, to expect that. I just am troubled by that, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative McNamara, I think we're going to have to move on. And one final comment from the witness of Representative Schumper. If I can just clarify one thing, I was just checking with my staff. I think the information was a name and a phone number, not the actual information about what was being said. Is that correct, or am I incorrect on that? Representative McNamara, I'm asking you, actually. The information our office received was a name and a phone number, right? Not the information about what was being sprayed. Is that correct or not?
Correct, Madam Chair. Remember, the testimony was I would get that information for them.
I want to make sure that.
And that's all the emails are, that I did do that. And unfortunately, it got caught once in a paper trail or whatever, and then we reached out a second time. And maybe it's the other testifier. If you're not the one that called my legislative assistant, I thought you acknowledged you were the one that said you didn't get the information that I had promised you. And I'm assuming, Ms. Meyer, that is you?
Madam Chair.
Yes. Final comment, Ms. Meyer?
I had talked. And then when you called me back, I met with Representative El Dunkey shortly after that, I think 4 days. And she promised to get me all that information so that I wouldn't worry about it. And I had talked to him. I called his office also. And I said, what am I supposed to do to sit on this? And he had promised to get me this information. So I didn't call the number you gave me because being as though it was virtual, and I tried to explain this to you, the international paper, virtual, my complaints were with international paper, and so virtual paper, I didn't know the difference. And Mr. Dunkey promised that he would get me that information, and I don't know if he forgot, I had called his office and reminded him, but I haven't gotten to receive that information. So.
Okay, members, I think we need to move on if we're going to hear the rest of the testifiers. Somebody get a final comment on that? Otherwise, I'd like to make sure we can.
Well, Madam Chair, I just think Representative McNamara is being kind of accusatory here. I mean, if at most what he had was a phone number and a name, and he's accusing Ms. Meyer of not following up on that when Representative Junkie, who she knows and has known for many years, assured her that he was going to get her additional information. I think that's what you're suggesting. And I mean, it's just like suddenly she turns out to be the she's moved from being the victim to the perpetrator of inaction. I mean, that seems quite unfair here, Representative McNamara.
Okay, what I'd like to do now is turn to the opponents. Thank you for your testimony. And I have a request from Tom Peterson to go early. I believe you have some other commitments, so Peterson, you come first, and then after that I have a list of Mr. Campbell, Mr. Dukowitz, Ken Peterson, and Bruce Clevin. Is that right? Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be as quick as possible. And my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and we do support actually moving the bill and continuing to have the discussion about this legislation with Representative Schumper. Our members have passed a resolution that would support increasing public information regarding pesticides to the public. There are definitely some issues in some parts of the state, but I want to also be clear that we think farmers do a very good job. My own farm, I have a cornfield 300 feet away from my house and my animals and my kids, and the people that farm that do an excellent job. And so we want to keep that in mind, too. But I do want to say I've been working with Representative Schumper on this legislation. But the question, I think, for the Health Committee, too, is as you look for what the issue is, so if somebody's getting sprayed, or an animal's getting sprayed, and it's a public health concerns, does this legislation get at that and improve that, and is that helpful? And that's kind of what we're struggling with and working on. So if you're trying to get more information out to the public, I just want to say a few things. Now, keep in mind, we just got this amendment an hour ago, so we're trying to work through that. But in the original bill said we're going to notify once a month, and does that help somebody if I'm sprayed and posting it a month later? Is that really getting at the public information and what we need? Or is there a better way to do that? So now it has 48 hours added into the amendment, and that's a whole different option that creates a lot of different issues and problems for farmers. So I urge you to consider that. And Representative McNamara asked about the how this impacts the farmers. By changing it to private applicators, that's essentially could be a farmer. So if in the state there's 79,000 farmers, but keep in mind the definition of a farm in Minnesota is anybody who has $1,000 of gross income qualifies as a farmer. So if I sell 3 steers a year on my farm, I qualify as a farmer. But if we're talking about full-time farmers, 20,000 applicators out of that 79,000, a little over, is what I asked the department. That's a lot of farmers. That's a lot of applicators that we're looking at impacting. And so I just want to, you know, consider some of the things in this bill. And I know it doesn't always necessarily have your purview for your committee, but I think it's important background. You know, if you're going to do that, and they have to report on the web or different things in writing. The 48 hours I see is web-based and wouldn't be done in writing, or maybe it would, but just glancing at it. But also how that works, I've been working with Representative Schumper and talking to some counties in the FSA, they have a very high computer use for their farmers. But other counties, it can be as low as 25% of the farmers use their computer or have working computers or have the speed to transmit. So I hope everybody supports Representative Mazin's broadband technology for rural areas.
Yeah.
But maybe that should be part of that bill. So and then the other issues are nuts and bolts things that we're trying to work on. If you were going to do a system like this, are things like the reporting dates on a month, a quarterly session, you know, if it's not going to impact my neighbor whose daughter has asthma, who's worried about when I'm spraying and can't get the information from me or the department, is it better to do it like on a quarterly or 6 months, or what's not too onerous for farmers and workable when you're trying to plant a crop and you're trying to harvest your product too and everything. So I urge you to consider those things. A couple other quick thoughts. And Representative Schumper, I appreciate he's addressed some of the issues as I've worked through how some of this might work with him. One was penalties. I would suggest I asked him about the penalties. I didn't suggest the penalties, but that might be something. I was curious as to what the penalty would be for a farmer. So if I don't file in a month or I don't file in 48 hours, what's that going to be? Because that impacts how we, as somebody who represents farmers, is going to impact. Is it $1,000? Is it a misdemeanor? What is it? You know, and so that's important. And so he did address that, and we'd have to keep working on that in the appropriate committee. And the other thing he did was the data mining. Representative Severson, that was my idea, so sorry about that. But the idea behind that was, in showing this to some of the farmers, is very simply, if this information is all public, could I be looking and just looking at trends and different things and seeing? And so that's a concern farmers have with this proposal. So I thank you, and we can, you know, continue to work and see if this is the best option for trying to get more information out there on pesticides, because there are some issues, and we understand that. And if it's not this bill, maybe it's something else. But stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Peterson, you've talked about a lot of the technical problems with this, and I think we know this has got a long road ahead of it. It's going to be an ag committee, and we've got some work to do there. But specific to the issue that Representative McNamara raised, and I want to put words in his mouth, but it seems to me this is the question. Do we, within our current system, have the laws in place and we just have an enforcement problem? Or do you think that your membership believes that pesticide drift is actually an issue that needs additional statutory work, regardless of whether this bill has got all the answers or not?
Representative Clark and Chairman Clark, Representative Moe, probably making sure that we have a framework in place for the what we'll call a bad actor, which there probably aren't very many of. But in general, how it works, if you got a problem with spraying, and you'll talk to your neighbor, and in most cases right now the neighbors will tell you, I'm going to spray tomorrow, I'm having my kid's graduation, whatever, my kid has asthma. We just would like to know. But a lot of people just don't do that. They don't talk, and a lot of times we don't all get along with our neighbors. So I might ask my neighbor, and he won't tell me. And then the other part of that is, you know, what if something does get sprayed and what's the enforcement action? To be honest with you, we've seen the department have good response time in some of the enforcement actions, but making sure that there's something in law, you know, in case, you know, people can't access the information, you know, is what we want to make sure that there is a way to improve that. So, you know, looking at improving that, you know, for that case where you can't get the information. So,
okay. Okay. Should we go to the next witness then? Members? Okay. I believe it would be Mr. Campbell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Welcome.
My name is
committee.
Nick Campbell, and I own Lawn and Landscape Gardens in Circle Pines, Minnesota. I'm also here representing Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, an organization of 1,600 Love Point family-owned small businesses. The MNLA has been a proactive leader in protecting the environment through recycling programs, phosphorus fertilizer restrictions, as well as water conservation legislation. In addition to landscaping installation services, our company also provides lawn care services, which requires us to carry a commercial pesticide applicator license. Anyone on our staff who applies pesticides is required to hold this individual applicator license. And to obtain this license, training classes need to be taken and a comprehensive exam must be passed, followed by annual continuing education credits to maintain this license. We support this law and have every intention to maintain our law-abiding status. However, MNLA and our company opposes House File 2459 because submitting our records in an electronic format every month would be a great burden. At Lawn and Landscape Gardens, we have 3 full-time and 12 seasonal employees. We do our very best to keep current records, and it would be impossible during regular working hours for our one office employee to take on this additional task of keeping these records constantly compiled and updated for submission to the state on a monthly basis, especially during our busy season. Most importantly, the MNLA, as well as myself, believe House File 2459 would unfairly single out commercial applicators in this quest to monitor the effect of pesticides and the human health ramifications. Countless owners who simply purchase a variety of pesticides at big box superstores and neighborhood harbor stores apply these products without regulation. Consequently, MNLA believes the data collected according to this bill would not conclusively provide the information needed for health checking purposes, since only a portion of these pesticides applied would be monitored under this proposal. In short, we believe regulation needs to be shared with these pesticide distributors and homeowner applicators. We support doing the right thing to protect human health and the environment, but we believe this bill would only succeed in putting a costly burden on small business without really adding any protections to the consumer. Thank you for our concerns. We welcome the opportunity to assist in an outcome that would mutually benefit the environment and everyone involved. Thank you.
Thank you. The question is, I think I'm
back there. Thank you. Madam Chair and Mr. Campbell, I just wanted to clarify one thing. The bill in its current form, and I think Representative Schumper would confirm that, does not require you to electronically send in the information. I think Representative Schumper allows it either to be filed electronically or by mail.
Madam Chair, that's correct. And okay. The only other requirement on companies such as the witnesses, companies are a 48-hour advance notice for commercial pesticide application. Currently, you do a 48-hour notice from when you apply to post to afterwards. So the only additional requirement on the companies that he's representing would be this additional 48-hour prior to application notice.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Magnus.
Thank you. Mr. Campbell, currently you're required, and I think most of the people in the committee and for the audience that doesn't know, I'm a past president of the organization you talked about and spent 30 years in the landscape nursery business, so I'm somewhat familiar. Even though I'm not a certified applicator, my business partner was and is. You are required to keep this information in your office And is it true that the Department of Ag could come in your office tomorrow if you sprayed today, or could come in and ask for information about, say you sprayed my lawn in Hastings, would the department be able to come into your office tomorrow and get information about what you sprayed on my lawn and when you applied it?
To my knowledge, I believe that's true. Specifically, I do not hold a license as well. But to my knowledge, I believe they can come and seek that information.
Okay. Thank you. And Madam Chair, I can, the department could confirm that. Okay, so you're currently keeping all this information available to the department on a moment's notice, so if it was needed. Under the bill, you would be required to mail this information into the Department of Ag once a month. So you'd spray my lawn on the first of the month, and you'd send in on the 30th a month a paper copy of what you sprayed on my lawn. That would be one of 3 million applications in the state of Minnesota last year. It could be one of 50,000 on a given day in the busiest month. 20 working days would be 1 million. So there's a machine somewhere at the Department of Ag that's going to take in 1 million pieces of paper, a month old potentially. And that's going to be a value to this state. Instead of being able to walk into your office tomorrow and say, what did you spray on McNamara's yard because their neighbor's got a problem? Madam Chair, I think that's the issue here. We've got a system that works, and I hope we hear from some of the other people that are applying it, either aerial or rural. We heard how it works in the residential area. The one other point I'd want to make, we go put a sign on somebody's yard 48 hours or 96 hours in advance. We have people in the town that are mowing their lawn twice a week. So now we mow the sign off. Does that mean that we don't have the sign on when you come back? The sign is really a value today. It's on the lawn to keep your pets and children off the lawn when you spray. That's the important thing. We've got a law today, Madam Chair and members, that work. It makes sense. We're holding people responsible. They got to go to class. They got to take class. The homeowners can go in their own home and apply stuff at double the rate. They don't have to let their neighbors know. They don't have to have any training. They can go to Home Depot and buy Roundup, and they can buy 2,4-D, and they can put it in all wrong. We've got laws on Mr. Campbell, and we expect him to act responsibly. Keep the record, so if we have a problem, we can come and get it in an orderly fashion. The law is working today.
Representative Amador, thank you very much, Madam Chair and testifier. I'm wondering, going along with what Representative McNamara is talking about here, do you actually have a computer in your business, and would you be able to electronically send those records in? I imagine 1 million pieces of paper would be burdensome to the department, but I'm thinking electronically to submit this information would not be that much of a hardship for your business, and I have a follow-up question to that.
Well, of course we have a computer. As far as doing the compilation of records like this, and according to what's considered a pesticide and the way we apply, it's much more than just a lawn application. So there would be considerable amount of work to be done on a monthly basis.
Okay. And my follow-up question to, again, the testimony. The question here, I discovered that my neighbor is having a lawn sprayed. They're on vacation. They have a regular contract with your lawn service. Can I call up the company today with privacy issues the way they are and ask you specifically what you sprayed on my neighbor's lawn yesterday?
I believe that's public knowledge. I don't know if it's exactly for sure, but I don't see any problem with that.
Representative Amador? Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Because that's not the way that I'm understanding it from my neighbors. That if, in fact, there's a spray, because you provide a number of services, there are different chemicals that are absorbed in that, you're required to put a sign up after you spray in my neighborhood that says, please stay off for 48 hours. That's after the application's already occurred. But if I were to call your business, and I don't believe a sign is required to have a telephone number of who's doing the application. Mr. Campbell?
Currently, I don't believe it is.
So I really have no place to call. I really have nobody I can ask. And when I call your company, I'm being told, I'm sorry, that's a privacy issue, and that's something you'll have to discuss with your neighbor. Would that be a course? Mr. Campbell?
I suppose that's a valid statement for sure. I don't see why something that couldn't be put on a sign.
Okay. I'm sorry, Madam. We want to get to the other witnesses. Let's just do the last question and try to get some other witnesses. So given that there might be some difficulty for a homeowner like myself to get that kind of information, to find out specifically what sprayed already occurred because I had no notice about it, the issue then is that we're looking at that there may be a website created that I then could go and quickly look up and see if my what chemicals were sprayed on my neighbor's yard.
As the outcome of this bill?
Yes, I'm sorry, yes.
You know, as far as the frequency, monthly, as far as I'm concerned and we're concerned, that is not the greatest timing for us to be sending out information. But for the information to be available and to be contacted as a homeowner or business, I think that's a great first step.
Right. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, to this point.
Okay, Representative McNamara, let me just take a second here. Okay. We've got three more witnesses who may be able to respond to some of these questions, and I'll tell you who they are. Mayor, you all have it in your agenda. And I'm wondering, Representative McNamara, since you're the one who's asking, do you want to speak, or would you just soon have the witnesses go and then speak afterwards? Because otherwise we're probably going to run out of time.
Yep. Just real quick, Madam Chair, just so Representative Madore does know, there is a phone number currently. If anybody is concerned like that, they call the Department of Ag, a 1-800 number or a local call, and let them know they're concerned, and the Department of Ag can go out and go to wherever they need to go and get the records. So there is access. If you're concerned and you think your lawn has been oversprayed or whatever, and we can ask the department to come up, but there is a number and there is a system so that your concerns can be answered.
And then we are going to bring, I'm going to bring my next three people up together at the panel.
I do. Madam Chair and Representative McNamara, I appreciate that I can call the Department of Ag, but I can tell you as a residential homeowner, I don't really know that the Department of Ag is responsible for whether or not chemicals have been sprayed on the lawn. So maybe we need to do a better job.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Dierkiewicz, Mr. Peterson, and Mr. Clevin, once the three of you come up, And I'm sorry that we're running out of time, but I'd like to have you each have a chance, and maybe you can have three chairs there if the state can help us, and we'll let you all be seated and give you...
I am here every day. I can refer to the next committee.
All right. Okay, that's fine. There is going to be another, probably several more committee hearings. Are there two individuals? Okay.
What? Sure. Roger Dukewood, Todd Collins.
Okay. And you... Okay, can you make the microphone come closer to where you are so we can pick that up? There you go.
Yes, Madam Chair, I did testify in Wadena. My name is Roger Dukewicz. I'm from Todd County, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I don't represent anyone. I'm here on my own. And I would like to state for the committee, my grandmother died in 1953 at 52 years of age from cancer. They had not yet had electricity or a horse. Cancer's been around a long time. I think there's a lot of false allegations and misinformation out here. This chemical right here, you can buy it off of the computer. You can put it in this sprayer, or you can purchase in any, I don't want to use a store, a chain store. 8 ounces. Pour it in there. You can buy another one off of the computer. 16 ounces. Pour it in there. But as a farmer, as these licensed applicators come forward, they buy one of these with twice the formulation, it has been a restricted use pesticide. Now why should we, as licensed, practical, intelligent, educated people, be subjected to ridicule and people prying into our business when we're supposed to be professionals about it? And anyone, if they speak English or not, can go in on the web and buy this stuff at a discount and place the volume, walk out in their yard. Of course, I assume that this is calibrated by the state of Minnesota to make sure it's putting the right amount on. And I'm sure there's a gallonage flow on the garden hose. Hey, this equipment that we're using is high tech. We might not have the computer in our house, but we have it on that equipment that these gentlemen are using. It's precise. You can only put on what's specified on the label, approved by the Environmental Protection Agency. These are approved chemicals. How many do we have to use? Here's the 7-Dot that people are hooting and hollering about the popple tree. Hey, the National Guard didn't go out there and confiscate that land from property owners. They bought it with the American dollar. And almost all of these instances that happen out in rural Minnesota, there are exceptions. They are the second generation where they retained maybe 1 acre. Those potato farms been out there 30, 40 years. And then someone comes along and moves in on 1 acre in the corner and says, oh gosh, that airplane is flying over me. He's spraying chemicals on the field. It's drifting on my house. Well, if you would have looked there last year, it was drifting there last year too. Why didn't you buy the house? Right now, there are commodities coming up the Mississippi River from who knows what country. Do you suppose you have regulations? Do you suppose they have the pesticide right to know law in God knows what country? So we know what's in that dust, in that drain, coming up the Mississippi River to the mills in our city? No. You don't have any idea. Absolutely not. We talk about health. In some of these papers that were provided up in Wadena, it said 35% of all the agriculture products have chemicals on it, fine chemicals. But this chemical right here is authorized for use in restaurants, in food processing plants, to sanitize the equipment that they put your food on. And then you want us to make it public? So someone, if they do, and I understand people get sick. When they get sick, they can go on the computer. Oh, look at there, that's the symptoms I have. And that guy sprayed there yesterday, or a month ago. For heaven's sake. It's authorized for 200 other uses that you do not need a license, that you do not need to report. So why are we going to expose the people that are feeding us? I don't see a heck of a lot of people that are underweight in this room. I just don't. We have the safest food supply in the world. This regulation is nothing but an impairment on the ability for us to produce the safest food supply in the world. And I'm sorry if I'm raising my voice, my hearing is going. I don't think it was caused from chemicals. I think it was from loud noises. My wife, 2 years ago, suffered a serious, serious brain aneurysm. She survived. It wasn't from the chemicals, it was a birth defect. That's what the doctors, I believe the doctors, that's what they say. She now has cancer in her nose. She has 28 stitches on this surgery, removing from her nose. It wasn't from chemicals, it was from baling hay. From the sun, baling hay. So are we going to blame it on the neighbor's chemicals? Do you want me running around my field putting up posts and signs? Or do you want me to go out there when the conditions are right and scientifically apply those chemicals and pesticides? And hey, I'm not a pusher. We don't have any chemicals. We don't use them under the kitchen sink. There's very, very few. There's very few in our garage for the garden. But you cannot grow a potato in this country commercially without a fungicide or a fungicide of one type or another. This legislation, to me, is no more than the satisfaction of the gratification of a few people who are trying to blame problems on something that is not scientifically supported. You have no evidence. Absolutely none. Maybe their problems are under their kitchen sink. Maybe they're out there in their sandals spraying this crap through their garden hose. But where is the requirement? You want me to, what if I have to notify 40 people that I'm going to spray a field? They're concerned about wind. What if one person's a late sleeper? You know, we usually start about 4 in the morning when the wind is down. What if one person can't get up from noon and then the wind is blowing 25 miles an hour? What are you going to do with that tank full of chemicals? Dump it in the river? I don't think that's a good plan. It needs to be used. It needs to be practical. And I don't have a problem. I'm probably more concerned about health than most of you. I don't know that. There's no way to judge that.
But what I do know is about Minneapolis, the Rum River, and the Minneapolis and the Mississippi River, the fish are alive. When the water leaves St. Paul, there's so many chemicals in that river that the male fish think they're female fish, and instead of depositing sperm on the eggs, they're trying to lay eggs. And that's an antibacterial soap. But yes, the state pushes and pushes. Oh, you gotta wash your hands with antibacterial soap. Maybe that should be a concern. Don't interfere with the Department of Agriculture doing their job. Day after day after day, we go back to school, we learn. I have two circulars in my folder, if you'd like.
Could you wrap up?
Carried away. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Peterson, did you want to say a few words? And we really need to wrap up, so...
Yeah. Well, first of all, my name is Ken Peterson. I'm from Peterson Aerial Spraying, and I do aerial application in the area that most of these pesticides are from. And first of all, I'd like to present some pictures to you, if you don't mind.
Thank you. And we'll pass them around, sure. Thank you. You want to tell me what these pictures are?
These pictures are of the home of one of the ladies here that is testifying that she is suffering from ill effects from pesticide spraying, and she lives in those conditions. Another one of the ladies here, you know, each time somebody calls into the Department of Ag with a complaint, they contact me. And
can I ask you a quick question? Did you get the permission of the person whose ever home this is to take these photos and bring them here today? Or?
No, they were just given to me by a relative. He said, I saw this person, what they're trying to do to your business, and it disgusts me, and so I would like you to have these. So they were given to me.
Hmm.
So anyway... like last summer I was called on a complaint that, well, I sprayed one field in the morning, went fishing, I get a call on my cell phone from the duty officer at the Department of Ag that there was a lady in the hospital who had been poisoned by pesticides. And they immediately asked me if I was spraying pesticides that day, and I said, well, I sprayed one field. And they wanted to know what chemical that was, and I told them immediately that it was folicure on wheat, a fungicide on wheat. And I thought, well, what happened there, you know what? And they come to find out that the woman who was supposedly in the hospital poisoned by chemicals lived 2.5 miles south of the field that was spraying, and wind was blowing away from her house. Now, and I have a whole file here about 4 inches thick, full of false allegations like that, of people, these people calling in and constantly harassing me. And such as this one right here, where I was accused of dumping loads of chemical on this woman's house. And I happened to be in the hardware store at that time, charging some parts. And I have a receipt in here that shows that I, at the exact time and date and my signature on it, of when this supposedly happened, you know, and these are the kinds of things I face every day. And there's, you know, they say the how sick they're getting and so forth. Like she just testified that she got sprayed in her front yard, yet it was 2.5 miles away from the field, and the wind was blowing away from her house, you know. But the system does work. Now, I immediately got called from the hospital. A nurse from the hospital made that phone call. I was immediately able to give them the information that they needed. A month later would have done no good at all. We have a system already in place that's working. And the Department of Ag, they call the Department of Ag. The Department of Ag calls me, and I immediately give them that information. They've never even had to come to my place to get it because I faxed it to them. And they have it immediately. So I don't know why we need to have another law that says that we need to send it a month later when it's not going to do any good anyway. Because they need this information, you know, much sooner than that. And we already have that system in place. Um, You know, our records are available to the Department of Ag at 24 hours a day. And I guess we already have a system of checks and balances that are already in place. We're required to keep these records in our office for 5 years. As far as electronically, I don't have internet access. I don't have a staff of people working for me. I'm a family-owned business. Just me and my wife and kids run it. So it's not like you think you're after big business. You're not. You're after just my family business.
Could you wrap up, please?
Okay.
Thank you.
Another thing, putting this all out in public, you know, I worked hard to get a customer base, and this information would be readily accessible to the public, then that means that my competitors could look up and see who I'm spraying for, what ingredients I'm putting on fields and so forth, so that they could, you know, try and take my customers away and so forth. So there's that to take into account. How are you going to protect that from happening? I just can't see that can happen.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. If there's any questions, I think we've heard from all the witnesses. Representative Semper, do you want to wrap up here? We really need to take a vote if we're going to
do
that today. So,
Madam Chair,
you might want to respond to.
You know, I'd be happy to answer any.
Let me just ask committee members. Can you stay another 5 minutes here? A couple minutes, okay. We're gonna take a vote, and we're gonna be done in a few minutes. Representative Severson, I think you have a question. Anybody else?
Thank you, Madam.
And I don't want speeches. Questions are fine. We want to make sure we can finish this today. Thank
Madam Chair, I know that this is a very volatile issue, and I think one of the things we need to do is make sure that this gets in front of the Ag Department. And I would amend the motion to refer this to Agriculture as the next committee. I think the issue of the people that we've seen testifying here have vested interest in their business, and to string it along to go to finance, then to environment, and then over to agriculture, I think would just confuse the process, and I'd like to be able to give these people their voice in the process early on so they know that it's heard. So I would, Madam Chair, I would amend the motion that this be referred to the Agriculture Committee.
Okay, Representative Severson is moving that we skip the Environment Committee, which I know is the next committee. The committee after that is the Agriculture Committee, and I guess, Representative Shumpert, do you want to respond to this motion? We are going to vote on it.
Right. If I may, Madam Chair, Representative Severson, I have talked to Representative Junkie about this, and he assured me that it was fine if it went to the Environment Committee and then to his committee. We talked about it last week on the floor, he and I did, and he said that was fine, as long as it eventually comes to his committee. So I just assume stay on that track. I know Representative Eakin would like to hear it. He's supporting it, I understand. And, you know, it is an environmental issue as well. I mean, I think you'd have to agree on that. And so I have no objections to going to Representative Junkie's committee. I just would like it to go to Representative Eakin's committee first. And that's what the three of us had, Representative Eakin, Representative Junkie, and I had all agreed that that would be the route we would take.
Okay, the Stevenson motion is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion fails. I believe there was another question, Representative McNamara, or comment, whatever.
Yeah.
Final comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Shumpert, we've changed it from, we struck out restricted use in your earlier oral amendment, but yet the front in Subdivision 2 still applies to commercial, non-commercial, and private applicators in their use of restricted chemicals. I think, if I'm not mistaken, but then you've changed it to non-restricted use, and I believe that now means every farmer in the state is under this. Is that your intention, that everybody will now be doing this? I'm wondering if you realize that.
Madam Speaker, no, that is not my intention. If you go back on page 4, you know, and I will admit we had a difficult time working out the wording on this. We do not intend to cover every small farm applicator. What we were trying to do is
of obviously get at commercial and non-commercial applicators. I think we can agree on that. Or private applicators who apply. Part of the problem is that there are pesticides that we felt needed to be addressed that were not covered as restrictive use pesticides. And in the last couple of days, we were getting different interpretations from Ag and Extension about what the definition of restrictive was. So there is a little confusion about that. But if you read 4.6 through 4.8, what we were trying to there is address the issue of the pesticides that were used on potatoes and hybrid poplar fields, as well as the commercial and non-commercial applicators. And as some of the, what some of us realized is that some of the private applicators were just farmers who did their own application, and so it became a little problematic. I'm certainly willing to work with you on resolving that issue of the definitions, Representative McNamara. Again, we're trying to get included here pesticides that are problematic, okay, and that people need to get some notification of. And, you know, we certainly do not want to put a burden on smaller individual farmers who are doing their own application. So,
okay.
You know, I'm willing, I'm open to any resolution of that.
Okay, unless there's any further comments, question, Representative Shumpert's motion is before us that this bill be recommended to pass as amended and returned to finance with the recommendation to be referred to the Committee on Environment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and the bill is a pass as amended. And we do have just one group of minutes before us, if we could take care of that. February 20th.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Yes. Thank you, members.
Chair, thank you. I don't want to be speaker. I'm the chair, though. Everybody in the door. Move the minutes. Okay, all those in favor of the minutes of February 20th.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you, members, very much for your patience today.
Hey.
Meeting is adjourned.